welcome to episode 10 of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, a podcast all about the creepiness of the Disney films and theme parks. I am your host, Mr. James H. Carter II. Right at the top of the show, I just want to send a special thank you to all of the listeners. And I say all, it sounds a little cheesy, but I mean the people that have been listening since I started, and also the new people that have been checking out the show. The download numbers keep going up, and it's very exciting to know that people keep finding, discovering the show and are hopefully enjoying it. So if you're listening to this, I'm thanking you. This episode, I am joined by Michelle and Jane from the Disney Dream Girls podcast. They came on to share with me and you all the things that creep them out at Walt Disney World. So, let's take a listen. Okay, I am here with the Disney Dream Girls, Michelle and Jane. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Hello.
And how are you guys doing today?
Better than you, I gather it's a little bit warmer where we are today.
Yes, it's quite freezing in New Jersey. It's the winter that will never end over here.
I've actually got sunshine and blue skies today. That's most unusual for the UK.
Yay.
Well, that's good. I mean, we have that over here as well, but just, you know, it's still 20 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's...
That's not good.
No. But, you know, for the love of podcasting, we venture on. And of more importantly, our love of Disney. We suffer through cold weather to talk about the things we love. So...
Keeps us going through the cold weather.
Yes, quite indeed. So you two have a podcast called the Disney Dream Girls. As I didn't just randomly decide to call you that. So why don't one of you tell me and all our listeners about your podcast?
Shall I tell them the story of how we sort of collided, Jane?
I think you're probably better, Michelle.
Well, originally I was a co-host on a podcast called The Mini Minxes, and that ran for about 2 years. And during that time, Jane's lovely husband, Simon Phipps, started emailing and saying he really enjoyed the show. And he, you know, and so Jane and her husband got chatting with me. And one spooky Halloween, they invited me to their house. Never met them before.
Wow, that's scary.
And
it was for a party. Can I just say that? We weren't having a genuine Halloween party. There was no other motive going on.
Oh, okay.
So I was walking from the hotel I was staying to Jane and Simon's, and I was told to look for a gentleman in disguise. And Jane's husband met me, and it was like, oh, my heavens, this man's wearing more makeup than me.
Wow. What was he disguised as?
Shall we just clarify, Michelle? He was dressed as the Joker.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Simon was dressed as the Joker, and Jane was a very, very attractive Catwoman, and it put completely my Miss Cherry Bakewell outfit to complete shame.
Thank you, darling.
Although I was tottering around on 6-inch heels carrying a plate of Bakewell tarts containing chili because it was a trick-or-treat treat.
Oh, okay.
And I got to meet Simon and Jane, and we just hit it off and became really good friends. And when my podcast host of the Mini Minxes decided to call it a day, she didn't want to continue with the show and said, you know, it's just taken up too much time. I contacted Jane and said, look, I don't want to give up my podcasting lifestyle. I love it. I've met so many amazing people, had such good fun. Do you want to start a show up with me? And testament to Jane and her husband, Simon, within 3 days, we had a name, email, website.
Wow.
Simon had done the most amazing graphics for our icons of myself and Jane as our alter egos. Myself as a bit of a Snow White-esque with a bit of a smile, mm-hmm. and Jane's a very big obsessive on Hidden Mickey, so she went for like a Disney Couture-esque Hidden Mickey cool dude. And we've been recording now since beginning of December, and it's taken off fantastically, don't you think, Jane?
It has, yeah. I mean, I know very little about the podcasting world until I met Michelle, so it's been a bit of a learning curve for me, but I think we kind of balance it out quite nicely, don't we? I tend to use and abuse my husband to provide the technical support and the artistic support, and Michelle has a great knack of coming up with ideas for shows and lots of contacts as well to get interesting people on and what have you. So I'm having a blast doing it. It's great fun.
Wow, and I'd say the drawings that your husband did are incredible.
He's very flattering, isn't he, Michelle?
He is. You know, you look at Jane and I, you know, we're both over 45 stone. We're like 6 foot tall. No, the kidding. He is an amazing artist, and he did some artwork for me when we were Mini Minxes and a couple of little commissions for me as well. Seriously, this is one guy you want to snap your crayons in front of because he's just so talented. So,
and you can see that on your website, which we'll give it away at the end as well. But is it DisneyDreamGirls.com?
It is.
It is, yeah.
Alrighty. So if you're listening to this and you're at a computer, just check that out right now so you can know what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
So, another thing I wanted to bring up, Asher, from your transition from Mini Minxes to Disney Dreamgirls, you did it something I thought was quite a feat, which you had something called Minxmas right before Christmas.
Yeah, Minxmas, a.k.a. have a nervous breakdown before Christmas. basically, a fabulous friend of mine called Craig Lucas, love him to bits, suggested this idea to me of when we were going to rebrand Mini Minxes and get Mini Minxes with a bigger audience, how about doing like an advent countdown to Christmas? And I said, well, I can't. Who'd want to listen to me for 14 days straight? And he said, well, why don't you contact all these lovely people that are in the podcast world and see if any of them would do like a 10-15 minute show. So I came up with the idea of Minxmas, sent out about 15 emails, not expecting to hear from anybody because it's like December, everyone's really busy. Mm-hmm. But every single person virtually I contacted, from like the guys at Season Pass to Window to the Magic, Diz After Dark, we contacted Dibcast, a whole host of people, we had Passport of Mums, Radio Harambe, and they all just did amazing shows. You know, you can still listen to them. They're on iTunes. And there was some, you were like nearly in tears because it was so poignant with memories of Christmas, talking about how Disney has enhanced their life at Christmas, what they do at Christmas. You know, we had people talking about pantomime, which is very uniquely camp, where men dress as women and women dress as men, and it's all good fun. Mm. And it was an amazing way, and it ended up launching Disney Dreamgirls. And through that, believe it or not, we have just made some amazing friends by all these people coming on our feed, basically, on our show for 15 days up to Christmas.
Wow. Yeah, it was incredible. I enjoyed it a lot. What I really liked about it was hearing a little bit of a different side from some of the podcasters, some of the shows, most of the shows I listen to. So it was stuff they weren't talking about on their show, and it definitely built up the hype for the launch of Disney Dreamgirls. So it was a cool move. I thought it.
Well done, show.
I try my best. It was good fun. I know it was a lot of hard work, but the shows I worked with were just amazing. You know, everyone sent in the work before schedule, and it was just as I expected, fabulous. They did the hard work. I just sort of edited and put it out and tweeted and told people about it, really.
Well, that's,
I think it shows what a good podcast community we're like, aren't we? We like to help each other out and look after each other, and I think that kind of was emphasised during the Minxmas as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we're definitely stronger working together than trying to work against each other.
Oh, life's too short for falling out. Let's just all be nice and friendly. Yeah.
Well, I do want to announce that I haven't told anyone this, that you have inspired me.
Ooh. Yeah.
And, you know, you guys did Christmas. You guys got that down. And I actually launched my show right in the beginning of December of this year. So I missed having the show out during the Halloween season last year. And obviously that's the epitome of what this show is about. So I'm not sure exactly what I'm going to do or what it's going to entail, but I think I want to try to do an episode every day in October this year. I know that's crazy.
And you've just said it now. Yeah, no,
I figured I needed to say it. I needed to just put it out there, unless I could just you know just not do it.
I think that is an amazing idea, because I personally have never been to Disney in that time frame because of my job. I'm not able to go in October, but to have a daily show just giving me different elements of the Halloween spirit would fantastic.
Yeah, very good idea.
Yeah, it should be. There's so much to cover, obviously, and I would love to get other people involved. I mean, of course, I think the 10-15 minute thing is a good goal. I'm not talking about full episodes every day. I'd have to start recording now. But I just wanted to, I kept thinking, Minstrels was such a good idea. I need to do something big for Halloween. My first Halloween. I know it's months away, but I feel like I got to start planning now, because that's how much work it's going to be. So
okay, well, every single listener of your show now has heard it, and they will be expecting it in October.
I don't know if it's going to be every day. There'll be something. I'll say that. All right, be something besides the regular episodes. That I can't say.
Cool.
But let's get to the meat and potatoes of what we're talking about here. And I asked you two to come up with what some creepy and scary things at Walt Disney World. You two have been there many times. I know for sure you've been there more than I have, because I actually grew up in California, so I've been to Disneyland more. I've only been to Walt Disney World a few times. So for sure I know you've been there more than me. So what do you guys got?
Well, we started because we were sort of thinking, well, actually, Walt Disney World doesn't really sort of advertise itself for being a bit creepy. So we started by getting a dictionary definition, and it was like causing an unpleasant feeling of fear or unease. And then, oh, actually, yeah, quite a few ideas came to mind.
Right, yes, it's all over the place.
And, you know, maybe it's because I'm a woman or a teacher, I don't know. We've organised it in very strict categories of each park.
I love it. I love organisation.
I think I'd like to start with Magic Kingdom, because it's my favourite place. And there are a few places, believe it or not, I personally feel a bit creeped out. And for me, it's got to be late night. Extra Magic Hours has just finished, and there's not that many people in the park. The Last Kiss Goodnight has gone on over the castle, where you get to see a few fireworks and it's lit up all beautifully. The janitorial staff are out with the little hoovers cleaning up the pathways. And if you walk on some of the walkways, especially up to past Cinderella's Wishing Well, it is incredibly eerie and quiet and dark and quite scary, really. So it does definitely put me on ease of all the little Chucky dolls in It's a Small World sort of leaving It's a Small World and coming round the park to come and attack me with a knife gun. So,
wow, that sounds amazing.
Well, if you've read Kingdom Keepers, the first volume, which I've only read the very first, and that does talk about the dolls in It's a Small World coming to life. And that was a little bit peculiar when I read that. It was a little bit, oh, no, that could actually happen. Could it?
Actually happen. Do you know what? There used to be TV shows in the UK that made kids' dreams true. And do you know what? I would have loved to have been dressed up as a kid as an It's a Small World doll and just jump out on people as they're going round on the boat. I would have loved that. How creepy could that be?
You've got a sixth sense of humour, Michelle.
And?
Sorry, I just thought I'd say it obvious. Well, I'm going to go round a little bit. I'm going to talk about Stitch's Great Escape.
Oh, yeah.
I've never done it. I've never wanted to do it. And I can't see the point, and I never will. the whole idea for me of being restrained in some sort of seat and then having Stitch run around and poke at me and crawl all over me and then burp at me. I'm sorry, but that just gives me the heebie-jeebies. That doesn't appeal to me at all. And that's just something I'm never going to do because I just think it's weird and I'm not going to do it.
I feel like you should just, you've heard about it third hand. You got to experience it to know how horrible it is.
Yeah. No,
Michelle. No, go on, Michelle. Yeah. You tell him.
First time I went to Walt Disney World, I was told, you've got to go on Stitch's Great Escape. And me and my three children are plodded off, not knowing what to expect because I was not a planner then. I hadn't done any research. Mm-hmm. So we all sat down in the little circle in the round and my daughter saw the shoulder restraint coming down. So she put her hands up straight over her head. The restraint put her head and arms through the gap. So she had to sit during the whole show with her hands up in the air.
Oh, my
God. All freaky. And I just kept on thinking, oh, my God, is something going to come and cut her hands off or something? And
that's horrifying, yeah.
Cast members. And that just really freaked me out. And then when I started getting spat at, I'm sorry, I think it's disgusting. I think it's the most vile thing to me. Burping and spitting and bottom burps are just not me.
And just to be clarified, in case any listeners haven't experienced this attraction, it's basically it plays with your imagination. You're mostly in the dark. They put you in these restraints so that you don't get up. Basically, that's nothing else is really happening to you. And it's supposed to be that Stitch is trying to escape a space prison and. When the lights go out, you hear him next to you. He's kind of in your face. You know, they mist water on you. They put this odor of hot dog breath. They make the restraints move a little bit. That feels like he's jumping on top of you. So it's really about like your imagination is really what's scary about this because it just plays on what you don't see. Theater of the mind, as they call it.
I prefer Figment.
Figment, yeah.
And he gives me skunk breath. I don't mind that.
No, yeah, that attraction is horrible. I mean, I would love to find somebody that actually says, oh, I love this. This is great. I mean, somebody told you this was great, Michelle? Or were they playing a joke on you?
I'll let you in on a secret, James.
Yes.
I've divorced him now, so it's okay.
Well, I paid the ultimate price for taking you on that ride.
Yeah, you took me on that ride. I'm now divorcing you.
Okay.
That was in the divorce papers as well, wasn't it, Michelle?
Yeah. Nobody makes me go where people do bottom burps. Thank you very much.
All right, moving on.
Shall I talk about Tom Sawyer Island then, shall I, Shell?
Yeah, seems I've never been.
Well, it's a long while since I've been over to Tom Sawyer Island, I have to admit. But I do remember going over there and going through the caves that they've got. And actually, I was really quite surprised at how dark they were and how disorientating too. I mean, I'm not a lover of dark, compact spaces either. But there really was quite an uneasy sort of feeling because I'm thinking, well, I don't know where I am. I'm kind of losing my sense of direction now. I'm a little bit disorientated. And I thought, considering it's obviously mainly aimed at children to go exploring, etc., it was obviously, maybe I'm just a very sensitive person and I didn't like it very much, I don't know, but that can be quite spooky, especially if you're not quite prepared and for it. I must admit, I've not taken my two over there. I don't think we've ever been with the kids, so I'm going to have to make sure next time we go that I drag them over there, whether they like it or not.
Yeah, I've actually never been to the Magic Kingdom one. I have been to the Disneyland one, which that was a long time ago that I actually went on there. I have really no memory. I haven't even been back since it's changed to Pirate's Lair in Disneyland. But in Magic Kingdom, it really just seems, not to be negative again, like it's just a waste. Like most people don't even, I mean, a waste of land. Like most people don't even use it. Does the steamboats even still operate on there? I feel like I never see them there.
Yeah, the steamboats still go around the island, and I know they changed because there was the canoe boats, whatever they were called, but they don't operate anymore. I mean, there used to be a little like snack spot on the island as well, which is quite nice because you go over there and you can actually sit and look out on the river and watch the world go by, etc., and have a little bit of, you know, an ice cream or a drink or something. But even that's gone nowadays. So I don't think it gets used quite as much as perhaps it once did. But it's something actually people should take the time out to go and have a look at it, because it's, you know, it goes back to some of the original stuff that was there, and it's a different sort of attraction to your roller coasters and your rides, etc. It's more about you going and exploring. But say dark caves, maybe not necessarily for me.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the next one that you got.
I think Jen, you've got one from the Christmas parade, haven't you?
Yeah, you see, I love the Christmas parade, don't get me wrong. Christmas parade's fantastic, and it goes on forever and a day, and it's brilliant. And I love the toy soldiers in the Christmas parade, but I do think there's something a little bit spooky about them. I can't quite put my finger on it, but they're quite robotic when they're walking.
Right.
And that sound of them marching, there's like the scraping of the feet on the floor. I don't know, it's a little bit menacing, it's a little bit... peculiar.
Right. Do you know where those toy soldiers are from?
I don't actually know.
They're from the film Babes in Toyland. Have either of you seen this film?
Oh, of course. Yes.
And that film is extremely creepy.
It is, actually, thinking about it now. Yeah. Obviously, my feeling was right then.
Yeah.
I'm creeped out for valid reason.
Go, Jane. Yay.
If it's a valid reason, I'll let it pass. But it's. I think they also might seem creepy because... They appear to be inanimate objects brought to life more than more than anything else in the parade.
They're almost menacing, aren't they, in some respects, because there's no emotion on them or anything like that. So, yeah, I can imagine very small children being quite perturbed by them, really.
Also having no idea what they're supposed to be, because they don't sell toys like that anymore. So they're just, like, scary wooden... monsters coming, zombie robot, you know, soldiers or something, with no emotions.
Yeah. They remind me of the Cybermen from Doctor Who.
Well, you know, yeah, and actually, you know what? I just thought of, I've got a flashback of a Simpsons episode where they go to a, how can we put it, a fake Disneyland, and the animatronics. Yeah, itching, scratchy land, isn't it? That's right. And they come to life, don't they? The animatronic robots that start attacking Homer, I think, if my memory serves me right.
Right.
I've got visions of Homer Simpson in my head.
Yeah, no, that was an amazing episode, and it was only the first 10 minutes. I remember I was freaking out, not to go off on that tangent. But yeah, no, that's basically what happens, is that all the animatronics come to life and start attacking the guest, and they have to escape, and then they go somewhere else, whatever else happens in the episode.
Can I take you both for something to eat now? Because I've chosen somewhere freaky and spooky.
It's not like us putting food into it, is it, Michelle?
No. Dark, spooky, and it's the smaller of the three dining rooms.
Oh, I know.
I have chosen the West Wing at the Be Our Guest restaurant.
Excellent.
Dimly lit, extra eerie. I gather it is actually the favourite of the Imagineer who created the room, Chris Beatty. But it is just so... damn scary. And ask the server who took me into the room, oh, this is where we like to put all the couples because they find it romantic. What kind of sick Muppets do you look at, the lady? You know, it was so scary. Seriously, it was enough for me to sort of like not want to eat in there and go wander around the other two rooms and take pictures in between eating in the scary room. You know, it's... And when you're in there as well, time passes so slowly because you're watching the petals of the rose. It's just like, I want the remote to whiz it on so I'll get the full rose back again. Mm. And there's storms outside, the thunder strikes outside the windows. There's this portrait of the beast, and it changes from the good-looking, handsome one, the one I'd like to date, to a really scary beast, really sinister. And I'm just sat there thinking, seriously, I don't even want to eat my dinner because I half expect a hand to pop up from under the table and go, rah! Because it's seriously, seriously weird. And then just as the lightning struck, whether it was coincidental, whether it was on purpose, the beast himself barged into the west wing.
Oh,
the music struck, and then he went again. It was, seriously, it freaked me out.
Wait, so the character came in the room while you were eating?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
The beast himself, you know, I'm 5'3". I'm a little bit of an itty-bitty person. He must be about 17 foot. And he comes into the room, and it came over like the loud tonneau. Guests who have finished their meal can meet the beast in his, I think they called it his library. And it was like, seriously, I want to go meet somebody 3 times the size of me? But I did, because his room was a lot less scary than the one that I was in. But, you know, it's even down to the stone floor and the carriages that they use to wheel up and down the desserts. It literally sounds like the prison jailer wheeling the food in. It's so scary. Seriously, I defy people with young children to take them in that room. Don't even eat there, just go in the room. Because it is the scariest place on property for me. It really, really is. So if your server says, oh, I put people in here because it's more romantic, say you're not getting a tip, love.
Well, I have to say, for all the things that you just said, I love it in there.
And that's why you do a podcast about creepiness.
Yes. I mean, it's not much of a shock. I mean, my last trip, that was the number one priority. It's like, I got to get into the West Wing. I got to eat in there. I stood in long lines to eat in the hot sun with no covering outside. Because I went there for the lunch service.
Yeah, you've got my sympathy. It's a hard wait, that.
Yeah, and I'm like, I got to do it. I was hungry. There was nothing but screaming children around me, you know, and I was just like, I'm going to tough this out. I'm going to get into the West Wing. And I didn't want to leave. I thought it was amazing. The beast didn't show up, so that would have been, you know, better. But to me, it's as close as you're going to get to actually eating in the Haunted Mansion, because that's pretty much what it's like.
But it was literally like eating in the film, because it was such a fantastic replication of what you would have imagined. But I think the beast only goes there on an evening, because as part of your evening package, there is a meet and greet opportunity with the beast.
Oh, okay, it's part of the dinner thing.
So, yeah, the dinner. So, hey-ho. Have you got another one for Magic Kingdom, Jane?
I've got one more, and it's Splash Mountain.
Okay.
Which sounds a bit peculiar, because I love the ride, absolutely love it. But I do think there's a certain twisted, macabre sense of humour about that ride. Especially, I mean, there's the drop in the dark for starters, which I think is a little bit mean, but it's that final lift hill. I think those two vultures that are up above you, dressed as undertakers, taunting you, and it's like, excuse me, I've just come through this all nice, jolly, holly, whatever, happy, happy. And then you've got them two stood there looking at me, telling me that I'm going to meet me doom. Yeah. And then I think, you know, obviously the drop's amazing and everything. And I'm sure that the only reason you've got that a mega finale piece singing Zippity Doodah is so that anybody who's scared themselves witless going down the big drop can actually compose themselves enough to get off the ride at the other end. But love it to bits, but I just do think it's a little bit macabre as you're kind of going through the end bit there. But I don't know what you think to that, Michelle.
Yeah, I totally agree. Although when I've gone and it's been extra magic hours and it's quite late, and because it's quite a long internal queue system as well, those walkways down into the queue itself when it's fairly, fairly quiet and there's no queues, they're scary as anything.
Yeah, it looks like you're going to a dungeon or something, probably, I would imagine.
Yeah. So that's what we came up with for Magic Kingdom. We didn't do so bad. We, you know, for the world's happiest place, we've got a few creepy bits.
I have something to say about Splash Mountain before we move on, which is I kind of look at that ride as actually a series of psychological torture, actually. Because it is, I mean, as you walk up to the ride, you just see the drop. So all you know that there is a drop. And also the drop looks like it's going into massively huge thorns. So, you know, That's pretty menacing right there. So you get on the ride, and every time there's all these fake out drops, you go into complete darkness, and you're like, well, this must be the drop that I kept seeing outside. And that happens maybe 3 or 4 times. And then you're like, I'm like, oh, I guess that drop's never coming, because like we keep dropping and it's just a little one. And you know, it's just a little one. And then finally, the scene you were just talking about, which of course, again, is one of my favorites, is going up the lift hill with the vultures. I love the music. It's I think it's Night on Bald Mountain, which is actually used in Fantasia. Yeah. And I don't think the vultures are actually from Song of the South. They look very similar to the vultures from Snow White. I don't know if they're supposed to be or not. I haven't heard any confirmation on that. But I listened to the audio part of that. I have that on from the the Parks albums. I've just gone up there and I have pretty much memorized everything that they say just from listening to that over and over. It's like, so you're looking for a laughing place, eh?
Don't you think the most unpleasant thing about the whole Splash Mountain experience is that only us Brits are probably one of the few places in the world that have actually got legal copies of Song of the South?
Oh, is it actually released?
We've had it released in this country on video. I've got a couple of copies on VHS. I know that in the States it's not been out for such a long time. Most people have acquired copies.
Right, they're not, yeah, you can't. Yeah,
but so. Not got a legal copy because Disney won't release it.
Right, so you actually... I think most people have no clue any frame of reference of what's happening at all. That might add to it. But I just wanted to bring in my 2 cents about that because I was thinking about, before this recording, I was thinking about attractions that you two might talk about, and I was like, Splash Mountain's fun. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm like, no way. It just makes you happy, and then it scares you, it makes you happy, and it scares you again, back and forth.
And we obviously miss the most creepiest place because...
It's obvious, Haunted Mansion.
It's just, we don't go for the obvious. Right, we go for the unusual.
All right, so let's move on. So what do you guys have next?
Epcot.
Okay, let's do it.
Basically, this last year that I went, I was very keen to go on Test Track because it was the first time I'd been on it since its refurb. Mm-hmm. Very excited. We got into the main hall bit, into the cars, going through the testing bit, and we were going at quite a speed, and then all of a sudden the vehicle came to an absolute virtual stop, and literally the seatbelt just cannoned me back into my seat. All the lights came on, I couldn't get the seatbelt off, and the cast members was coming over the loud tonne, please stay where you are, a cast member will come and assist you. And I was thinking, oh my god, what on earth is happening? Is the building on fire? Am I going to die? Seatbelted into a test track vehicle. I was like freaking out. And then I looked all around me and it was like the whole magic of the ride had just disintegrated, because basically it looked like a really big sports hall with cardboard cutouts with bits of neon on. It just sort of gave me this really sort of... unpleasant feeling of so basically we ended up getting released from the vehicle and escorted down the world's dullest staircase and told not to take any pictures, which of course I did. it just freaked me out a little bit that something does go wrong on these rides, and it was just so unexpected to have happened at that point.
Right.
So that's my creepy story about Epcot.
Yeah.
I don't have any really creepy stories about Epcot. I can't really think of anything at Epcot that freaks me out.
Nothing?
No.
What about the pickles really in the German pavilion? I know a lot of German friends, and they've never heard of the stupid pickles that they are supposed to hide on their tree.
Yeah, that is a little bit weird, to be fair. That's just weird. It's not creepy. It's just weird.
So we then sort of gave up on Epcot, didn't we, Jane? Because we sort of ran out.
Well, I mean, there's the troll in Maelstrom, but is he really that scary? I don't really think so, really. I can't. And that's where I kind of run out of ideas with Epcot. So what we're going to do next then, Michelle? Animal Kingdom.
Animal Kingdom. Okay. I'm back to my walkways.
Yeah.
I'm back to my walkways, just basically because, especially around It's a Bug's Life, you can walk around some of those pathways and never bump into people. It's totally deserted. And I'm always on the lookout for what Leonard Kinsey would say is a optimum spot. And it just freaks me out.
I beg your pardon, Michelle.
Well, read The Dark Side of Disney and then you'll know what it's all about. But seemingly people do use these walkways for things that really isn't family entertainment, Jane. And it just sort of scares me as you're walking around, because it is, you'd think in a theme park, people around you all the time, but some of the walkways and on the trails and things, it's so deserted, you know, you just think, oh, scary. And on one of the walkways, the trails, I think it's the Maharaja one, these birds all around me, and they freak the life out of me because I think they're either going to poop on my head or attack me in a scene a la Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds, and right. I'll just get pecked to death by a killer parrot.
Sorry, I have a vision in my head now, Michelle.
It's okay.
It's all right. But talking about, you did mention in there It's a Bug's Life. I mean, and once you've got all around all those walkways, and then you do get to It's Tough to Be a Bug. Mm. And, you know, I'm going to be the typical wussy female now and say that it's lovely, it's great, but why do we have to have the 4D effects? Why do I have to feel like there are bugs really running around me? I don't need that, because it's creepy and it's horrible. And it was the same over, actually, back going back to Epcot, it was the same when it was Honey, I Shrunk the Audience, and there was the mouse running around your ankles. No. Don't need that. I don't mind a bit of spray, a bit of water, a bit of wind, an odd smell or two is perfectly fine. I just don't need things running around my feet or crawling up the back or whatever it may well be, because that's just, it's just not cricket, is it really?
No.
I feel like they put that show together for the sole purpose of tormenting children.
That's a good idea then.
Because that show, of course, again, I love it because it's there's, you know, there's like a brief, oh, this isn't this educational, but everything that they do is just to freak you out. It's just nonstop. And the last time I went in there, it was this great mix of children laughing and crying. It was this weird vibe. It was like, it was a really pushing emotions, and everyone was just on edge. And I was like, this is why you come to Disney. Like, you can't get this anywhere else. Like,
scare the children to death. Yeah. Well, we went over to Hollywood Studios then, didn't we, Jane?
We did, yeah.
And I'm going to talk about this attraction because it's one that is not for Jane. It's not one of hers.
No, I don't do this.
It's the Tower of Terror.
Yes.
And I'm obsessed with this ride to the point I went to Theme Park Connections and bought myself an original cast member shirt.
Wow.
That I have at home. And whenever I want to creep people out on Halloween, I will wear that. I love it. The minute you go through where the gate is to the hotel and you're walking around the pathways, you just suddenly get the vibe that you are in somewhere that is utterly creepy.
Mm-hmm.
You enter the hotel and the hair on the back of my neck just starts to just stand on edge. There's the scratchy music, the cobwebs. And if it's a particularly quiet day where there aren't any annoying people talking, you can just stand there for a few moments and just absorb it. And I really do think that I am there in that long time era. And I've got a bit of a funny story here.
Okay.
As you go through onto the library, I recall last year I was with a male friend of mine, and you go into the library and it's all dark and it's all spooky, and Rod Serling comes on and gives the little spiel. So I thought I'd just hold my friend's hand. So I reached out and held his hand, and the light went on and he wasn't my friend.
Wow.
Luckily, he took it in very good spirit, and his two daughters who were with him just couldn't stop laughing. And I'm just thinking, it's a good job I didn't go to squeeze his bum. I really, really that sort of like gave me an unpleasant feeling that if I'm ever going to be in a dark place, not to touch anybody at all. But the whole ride experience, it is the fear that you get when you go into the lift shaft and you go up and then you go horizontal, you go vertical, and then you're just waiting. Is it going to go down? Are you going to go back up again? Are you going to go down again? It's just, I love it to pieces. I really, really do. And it's my favourite ride, and I think it fits the whole creepiness, especially the full backstory and the theming just wonderfully. The only thing that is missing is Freddy Krueger from the boiler room, really.
Right, yeah, when you're down there, you expect him to show up.
Yeah. I just love to wear a Freddy Krueger-style jumper and a hat and just scrape along the wall as I walk in.
Yeah, I mean, this ride's got it all when it comes to that. I mean, it's got the thrill factor, you got the amazing theming, you've got the classic Pepper's Ghost effects. It's got it all. It is definitely a creepy ride.
I really ought to do it one year, didn't I, Michelle?
Yes.
She was going to make me do it last year, weren't you? But I managed to chicken out of it. I'm going to have to pluck up the courage to do it one year.
Do you like thrill rides at all, Jane?
Not particularly, no.
Well,
she's trying to convince me that it's not that bad. So, who knows? Maybe one year I'll pluck up the courage to give it a go. We'll wait and see. But talking about rides, great movie ride for me is the alien scene in the Great Movie Ride. I don't like the film, although I will acknowledge it's a fabulous film. It's a brilliant film, and I have a husband who loves all that sort of stuff, so I acknowledge the genre and how good it is. But the alien scene really does creep me out. I know it's coming, and I know whereabouts it's going to be, and still, every single time, I'm sitting there thinking, don't look at it, don't look up, it'll be fine, it's not going to come out at me, I won't see it, I won't, you know. And then even my daughters now go, when's it going to come out? When's it going to... I'm like, shut up, Molly, I don't need to know. Just let me ride through it. I know. So that's just because that's my own dislike of the alien thingamajig, whatever it actually is. I'm a big wuss. And that's why I don't like it.
Yeah, that's kind of... every time I go through that, I'm like, this is pretty intense for just, you know, think you take the whole family on there and, you know, go through all these scenes. And, you know, I can imagine it being quite traumatizing for young kids.
Yeah. I must admit, I think the first time we took our kids on it, I did actually warn them. I think, especially as my daughter would only be about... I think the first time she read it, she would have been about 3.5, 4 years of age, so I did actually kind of let her know what was coming up and made sure I was holding her hand just so she wasn't going to get too freaked out about it. Now, of course, she laughs at me because she thinks I'm just a big daft thing, because she's now nearly 13 and thinks I'm just being a baby over it. So come full circle, I think, on that one.
Right.
I think we've just got one other point out of the parks, really, that as international guests... For me,
okay,
you get the biggest feeling of unease. That's the night before the last day, as the cases come out from under the bed.
Oh, yeah.
And it's the fear that you're going home. At some point, you are going to have to walk down Main Street for the last time and wipe away the tears without anyone looking at you and thinking, weirdo. And then fear... The second fear really is the excess luggage charge you're going to get when you get to the airport because you've spent so much money on buying Mickey Tat.
Yeah, and of course that the other fear, Michelle, that you're kind of missing out there is that you know that invoice, that bill they give you at the end that you've been using your magic band or, you know, the old Keys to the World card to charge everything to, and you really haven't been keeping as good a track on it as you should have been doing. And now to open up on your last morning there, thinking, okay, how much did I actually spend this holiday?
That's scary. That is scary, yeah. Well, I gave you guys a mission and you came through.
We tried.
Very cool. Alrighty, well, I guess I'll wrap that up. So... people want to check you guys out, How can they do it?
Go on, Jin. You're always best at remembering everywhere.
Oh, I'm going to make a complete mess of this now. I understand that you've said that. Thanks, Michelle. Right, well, we have our own website, and that is over at www.disneydreamgirls.com. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for Disney Dream Girls. You'll find us on there somewhere or other. We can be followed on Twitter, and that is at Diz Dream Girls. And then you can email us over at info@disneydreamgirls.com. Please get in touch. We love to hear from everybody out there. And if anybody has any ideas for shows or things they'd like us to cover, you name it, we'll have a go at it, won't we, Michelle?
We will indeed. And if you want to subscribe to our podcast, easy way, search iTunes Store or your podcast app for Disney Dream Girls and subscribe, and you won't miss a show.
That's right. The magic of podcasts will be delivered right to you.
Indeed.
Well, great. Well, everyone, check them out. And thank you, too, for coming on the Creepy Kingdom podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Alrighty, welp. It's about that time to get up on out of here. Before I do, I just want to, again, thank Michelle and Jane of the Disney Dream Girls for coming on. We had a blast. We had fun talking even before and after the recording, and also during, as you heard. So it's good times. Check them out, DisneyDreamGirls.com. Coming up on the next episode of the Creepy Kingdom podcast, I'm going to be taking a look at one of my all-time favorite Disney films, Darby O'Gill and the Little People. That's all I'm going to say about it right now, so just get ready. You can contact me. You can do it. All you got to do is email me, creepykingdom@gmail.com. And you could also, you can do this. I give you my permission. You can go to creepykingdom.com. You can see show notes. You can watch videos. You can see creepy Disney fan art and cosplay pics. You can see it all. You can get the links to all of our social media. Twitter, Facebook, Pinterest, YouTube. It's all there. creepykingdom.com. You can let me know what you think of the show. And you could subscribe to the show in the iTunes store. Just search Creepy Kingdom. We're the only one that comes up. We're the only Creepy Kingdom in iTunes. So it's really easy to find us. Just put it in there. You know, leave me a review. Let me know what you think of what's going on here. And, you know, click the 5-star button. Because I'm sure you think this is a 5-star one. That's not in question. But anyways, let me know. And also, we are on the Stitcher app. So if you don't want to download stuff, you just want to stream podcasts directly to your phone, we're on their Stitcher application. Well, until next time,
keep it creepy. I have a girl now. It's midnight. Pleasant dreams.